February 23, 2023, Quincy, Illinois. Becky Bliefnick is home alone at her house on Kentucky Road when an intruder breaks in through the second-story window. Chased down a hallway and trapped inside the master bathroom, Becky is shot 14 times and will suffer for minutes lying in the dark, waiting to die. The would-be assailant took nothing from the home, only Becky's life. But who would do such a thing? She was a beautiful, brilliant nurse and a mother of three, but she was in the middle of a contentious and ugly divorce. A divorce from a man whose once given answer on a game show was that "I do" was the biggest mistake you could make on your wedding day. This is Becky and Tim Bliefnick, The Fatal Feud. Hey y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Back, everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for our friends in Bengali.
Bengali.
Yes. Shagoto, shagoto, shagoto.
Very good. Wherever you're listening, be sure to like, rate, and review. You can subscribe wherever you listen to our podcast.
Yes.
And speaking of following true crime every single day, yeah. If you want to do that, you can join the H2H In-Laws and Outlaws. That's our closed Facebook group.
That's our family.
It's our family. I like to post photos in there of the podcast, and others in our crew post photos of people putting red food coloring on the icicles that hang from their homes this winter. Thank you, Mary Wilson, for that one.
It's funny.
It's captioned, "Get yourself some red food coloring so your neighbors have more reasons not to speak with you." Genius idea.
Yep, absolutely.
Also new this year, 2024, we want to start highlighting some of our listeners' stories from emails and comments.
Yeah.
And this one was interesting and is from the H2H YouTube. And they're commenting on the story of Tony Joe and Cowboy Henry.
Hmm.
This comes from Ruby Strickland. Quote, "I'm a Lake Charles, Louisiana native. I've grown up in this legendary story. Tony Joe is buried in the same cemetery as some of my family in the middle of Lake Charles.
Hmm.
It's an unremarkable grave, nothing to catch your eye. She usually has flowers rather than fresh or silk. I don't know if she still has family in this area or a lasting fan base."
Oh, wow.
"We've been told of the favoritism she was shown by her jailers. However, in the end, even her admirers couldn't save her. It's a common belief here that she wasn't the trigger person. And it is said that the old courthouse is haunted by her spirit."
Well,
we did talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
She said, "I don't know if I'm allowed to post a picture here, but I can take one of her grave next time I'm out at Orange Grove Cemetery." So, Ruby, I encourage you to join the In-Laws and Outlaws because there are about 1,000 people who would love to see that photo.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But we do appreciate all your comments and emails.
Yes.
Well, this case is really fresh.
Okay.
The crime, the trial, it all happened in 2023. Before I get started, let me thank some sources. WGEM-TV in Quincy, Illinois, Legacy.com, Court TV, The Muddy River News, Deadline.com, ABC News Channel 20, Springfield, Illinois, Medium.com, and CBS 48 Hours.
All right. Well, you ready?
I am.
Let's do it.
Rebecca Bernadette Postal Bliefnick.
Wow.
She goes by Becky.
I'm glad she does. Jeez.
Well, Postal is her maiden name.
Okay.
Becky Bliefnick. She was born on November 19th, 1981 in Quincy, Illinois, which is a little town north of St. Louis and west of Springfield, sitting on the western border of the state where Iowa and Missouri meet.
Huh.
It's known as the Gem City, and in the 19th century, it was a transportation hub where river boats and railways met.
Nice.
Becky is the daughter of Bernadette, Bernie, and Bill Postal.
Okay.
She has a sister, Sarah. Now, Becky graduates from Quincy Notre Dame High School, where she was named valedictorian. This one, she's a smart cookie.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the first of many academic and professional accolades she's going to get in her lifetime.
I remember when I was in high school, because my guidance counselor, he came to me and said, Rob, you know what a valedictorian is, right? And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, you're not going to be one of those.
You're talented in other ways, honey.
Sorry.
She then went to Quincy University, which is also in Quincy, Illinois. It's a private Franciscan university, and it's very small. In 2022, their total undergraduate enrollment was 1,146.
That was a university?
That was a university.
Wow.
That's smaller than my high school.
Yeah, exactly.
That's smaller than, I believe, my sister's graduating class in our high school.
Wow.
It's a small school, but actor John Mahoney went to school there, and James Pankow, the trombonist for
Chicago,
the band Chicago, and brother to the lovely John Pankow. We love him as an actor.
Yeah.
Becky graduated cum laude from Quincy University with a bachelor's degree in biological science and a minor in chemistry.
Wow. Sounds like our son.
Yeah. We have a son who has a few degrees like that. Right out of college, she took a job with Sanofi Aventis, which is a pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
And she's a top performing sales rep there. Hmm. Now, while Becky is in school at Quincy, she meets Tim Bleefnik. Tim was a football player and a college athlete at Quincy. Tim is born on April 26, 1983, in Decatur, Illinois, and is the son of Ray and Amy Bleefnik. His father, Ray, at one point worked in sales. His mother, Amy, worked at St. Teresa High School, but she also seemed to make a run for the state Senate seat.
Oh, wow.
When I did digging through all the microfilm to like find out things about their families, I did see an article about that.
Gotcha.
He has two brothers, Ted and Tom. So three boys, Ted, Tom, and Tim. Which is easy if you're a mom to run through all the names.
Yeah, exactly. Because you always repeat.
You go through everybody. Everybody in our house, I went through everybody, even the dogs.
Even the dogs, yeah.
Until I got to the right person. I had trouble even tracking that much down because a lot of my research and a lot of other research hounds like myself have said that the internet has been scrubbed of a lot of information about this family.
Oh, really?
Yes. He grew up in Decatur, Illinois, and went to school at St. Teresa's, where he was a star all-county linebacker for the Bulldogs. Hmm. And while he's there, he's the senior scholar athlete. He wins that award.
Wow.
He also played basketball. And when he goes to Quincy University, he will play football, where he's listed as a criminal justice major.
Oh, wow.
Which is a little ironic.
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make is that this family is very well known. They're very involved in their community, from sports to politics, civic organizations. Tim basically grew up in a prominent and accomplished family.
Gotcha.
Becky and Tim knew each other at Quincy University, but they didn't start dating until after they were both out of school. And when they did start dating, they fell in love and got married on September 18th, 2009. Tim was also in sales, and for the first 5 years of their marriage, it was wonderful. Everybody that they spoke to said that this marriage was wonderful in the beginning. They had two little boys, and Becky quit work to stay at home with the boys.
Okay.
But she did have a dream of working hands-on in the medical field.
Okay.
So after she leaves pharmaceutical sales and stays home with her kids, she wanted to go back to school eventually. She just had that little hankering. She had that calling.
Sure.
And she wanted to go back to school to get her nursing degree.
Well, when you're an achiever, I mean, you don't want to just become
stagnant. A world beater.
Yeah,
she really is.
Yeah.
And this, I believe this was the beginning of the end for them. Mm. They had these two small children. Becky's going back to school. And according to Becky's friends and family, Tim didn't do much to help around the house or to help with the children.
Mm.
And according to Becky's sister, Sarah, Tim became manipulative and controlling.
Mm.
Their marriage wasn't a partnership. And when Becky was deep into her nursing degree, she got pregnant. But she carried on taking care of basically everything around the house and for these two boys while she's going to school and pregnant.
Wow.
She gives birth to their third son during spring break of nursing school. Huh. And I read that she only missed one day of class after having this baby.
Wow.
Becky graduated summa cum laude from Blessing Riemann College of Nursing and Health Sciences, and she received the Faculty Outstanding Senior Award.
Before I said achiever, it sounds like she's an overachiever.
Yeah, she's a Wonder Woman. Yeah. She's a Wonder Woman. World beater. I always love using that term. She's a world beater. She worked as a travel nurse during the COVID pandemic and was nominated for the International DAISY Award, which honors exceptional care by extraordinary nurses. Wow. She was a certified trauma nurse and a sexual assault nurse examiner. God love her heart.
Yeah.
In 2023, she was working at Blessing Hospital and was still going to school because she's now working toward her nurse practitioner certification.
Wow.
She volunteered in town at her boys' school. She even worked with the animal rescue group in town. She loved her three boys more than anything in the world, and she was very strong in her Catholic faith.
Gotcha.
I also read that she had a contagious laugh, and for her boys' upcoming school Olympics, Rob's going to love this, she had this idea that they would have an obstacle course that ended with a whoopee cushion to stop the timer. And we know that all little boys love fart sounds.
That's my kind of game.
I knew you'd love that. But as Becky's professional life is blooming, her marriage is wilting. According to Becky's friends and family, Tim was controlling and mentally abusive. And if Becky wanted to go and be all these amazing things in the world, she'd better be doing it all at home, too.
Jeez.
In 2020, Tim, his two brothers, and his mom and dad were contestants on Family Feud with Steve Harvey.
Oh, wow.
It's a show that Rob and I love to watch sometimes.
Yep.
Mostly we like to watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune because we're those old people now.
We have our dinner, we sit in front of the TV, and we watch Wheel
Don't
of Fortune.
Don't tell all of our secrets.
It's fun.
Rob is usually better at Wheel than I am, but I'd say I beat him at Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah, because I'm an idiot.
You're not an idiot, but I am filled with all kinds of information.
She really is. She's
random information. I'm good at that.
Yeah, I keep telling her she should audition
no,
for Jeopardy.
No, I would never audition for Jeopardy. No. But during their appearance on Family Feud, one of the questions asked by Steve Harvey was, after surveying 100 men, what was the biggest mistake you made at your wedding? Mm. And when they get to Tim, he answered, after prefacing it by saying, I love you, honey, and this is not me, his answer was, quote, saying I do, end quote.
Yeah, I don't care if that wasn't directed toward her. That's that's going to get you in a whole heap of trouble.
Well, it was on the board, but damn, son, that's called foreshadowing.
Yeah, I would have fallen on the saber on that one and come up with some stupid answer.
There is a funny clip of two men, and they're just shaking their heads. Neither one of them. It was something about your wife.
Yeah.
And neither one of them will answer. It was like the fast round in the beginning when they decide who's going to play or pass.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just both there shaking their heads because neither one of them are going to answer it.
Not going there.
It's hilarious. I'll see if I can't find that clip and post it in the In-Laws and Outlaws.
Smart guys.
But by the yes, very smart men. But by the end of 2020, things aren't going well for Tim and Becky. They're fighting. She tells her friends, quote, he shouts in my face, shoved me in front of the kids. I think he has serious mental health problems. He's becoming more vengeful and unpredictable, end quote.
Wow.
But here's the thing. She wants to save her marriage. She wanted to go to marriage counseling. But according to Becky's sister, he refused. And on January 21st of 2021, Tim filed for divorce. Hmm. Now, according to Becky's sister, Sarah, Tim said he filed because Becky was a different person after she became a nurse because of the stress.
Okay, whatever.
Or maybe you just couldn't handle a firecracker independent woman. She's got it going on.
Yeah.
I just don't think she was listening to him.
Yeah, right.
But Sarah, her sister, says that Tim filed because he could not control Becky. Hmm. And after they file and lawyer up, it gets contentious. They fight over everything.
War of the Roses.
Everything. Exactly. War of the Roses. They fought about money, the marital house, the kids, the custody of the kids. Tim says Becky is vengeful because she's angry that he filed for divorce. Tim tells people that Becky tells everyone he's having an affair, something he denies. She told people he was an alcoholic. He said that this is also untrue. Tim files a petition for protection against Becky for harassment, that she's stalking him.
Oh, please.
And he gives an example where Becky was combative at a parent-teacher conference. To which I have to say, how is she stalking you if she's a parent and she's at a parent-teacher conference?
Yeah, Tim sounds like he needs to get a backbone.
I'm rolling my eyes.
Yep.
Rebecca's attorney, Dennis Woodworth, isn't surprised when the judge does not grant it. But days later, Becky sends a text to her sister saying, quote, "If something happens to me, please make sure the number one person of interest is Tim,"
whoa,
end quote.
That's called foreshadowing.
No, I already foreshadowed.
Okay. Let me take that back. What do you value
on my... This is what I live with, y'all. I'm just telling you. Yeah. But she's saying this to her sister. It's prompted because one of her friends is actually murdered by her husband.
Oh, wow.
And I think that she felt that that was just a little too close to home.
Sure.
And here's what Tim wants, by the way. He wants the house. He wants custody, 60-40 for him. He doesn't want to pay child support, and he wants his father to be able to be around the boys unsupervised. And this is a little bit murky, but hang on to that thought for
all
just
right.
a second, okay?
I'm hanging.
Becky filed for an order of protection against Tim, stating that he was coming into her home uninvited.
Hmm.
She's still living in their marital home on Kentucky Road.
Okay.
Tim's renting a place not too far away on Hampshire Street. And she also says that he is falsifying things about her. This order of protection isn't granted either.
Hmm.
But the judge did say for them to just stay away from each other.
Yeah. Grow up.
Just go to your own corner.
Yeah.
Stay away from each other and each other's homes, except to exchange the boys.
Right.
Also, the judge ordered Tim to return a 9mm handgun that Becky gifted him because it's registered in her name. That's why she wants it back.
Gotcha.
Tim's an avid sport hunter, target shooter. So he likes to just shoot targets, but he's also a hunter.
Okay.
On February 10th, there's a court order for Tim to return the gun, but he doesn't want to do it. And later, Tim's going to say that he hasn't seen that gun in over 3 years. But back to Becky not wanting Tim's father to be with her boys, I can tell you that according to CBS's 48 Hours, there were court documents about Tim's father, Ray, which at that point were public record. But you can't find those public records anywhere online right now.
Hmm.
I did read in one source, and it was reported on CBS's 48 Hours, that Tim's father, Ray, had a, quote, history of perversion around children.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just going to leave that there.
Wow.
On May 9th, Becky's friend Nicole Bateman is texting with her, and Becky says, quote, "He told me if I outed his dad that he," meaning Ray, "would probably have to move, then kill himself."
Wow.
"I absolutely think he will try to take the kids sometime," end quote.
Man.
And if Ray's been accused of being inappropriate with minors, I'm not saying that that was what happened, but if that was the case, I wouldn't want my children around him either.
No.
Even with supervision, which is what they have right now.
Right.
On June 4th, Becky and her former coworker, Becky Spots, another Becky, these two are chatting on Facebook via DMs. Becky will later say that Becky didn't want Tim's father to have unsupervised contact with her children ever. She actually feared that he would run off with her children.
Hmm.
So she's told more than one of her friends this. And Becky also tells her friend that Tim has, quote, "mental health problems," end quote.
Right.
Then in October of 2021, Tim's cell phone is factory reset, erasing anything and everything on it.
Hmm.
By November of 2021, Becky is now represented by Gerald Timmerwilk, and he goes to Tim's attorney, Casey Schnack, and says, look it. Becky and her former attorney have asked for this 9mm handgun, so turn it over. He does not.
Hmm.
By this time, with Becky and Tim hurling accusations at each other, the judge in the case appoints attorney Rick Zimmerman as guardian ad litem.
What's ad litem?
A guardian ad litem, or GAL, is an attorney appointed by the court to represent a child involved in a legal matter, and they advocate for that child or the children's best interest.
Gotcha.
And a GAL has every right and power of an ordinary attorney in a family law case, including conducting discovery and presenting evidence.
Okay.
It literally translates as a guardian for the purposes of the legal action only.
Got it.
So how horrible does it have to be that she has an attorney, he has an attorney, and the judge feels like the kids need an attorney so that their voice is not lost in the middle of all of that?
Yeah, this is more like World War III of the Roses.
It really is. Then on December 16th, 2021, Becky files for an ordinance of protection against Tim's father, Ray. But with the guardian ad litem looking out for the boy's best interest, it was unclear to me from all the sources I read if it was actually granted or not. But it's a lot of fighting between these two. And by March of 2022, Becky is still talking to her gal pals about how horrible Tim is. Quote, if he doesn't get his way, he may literally lose his mind, end quote.
Wow.
By August, there's a court order that details how the exchange of children must be made.
Good Lord.
They have to have a judge rule on how they exchange the kids.
Wow.
Tim and Rebecca must stay within 3 feet of their cars when exchanging children.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Those poor kids. Yeah, those poor kids.
And yes, obviously, these poor children.
Yeah.
Also, they use recycled grocery bags, in particular Aldi bags, to cart the kids' clothes back and forth between the two of them.
And how old are the kids at this point?
They are, I think, 10, 8, and a baby.
Yeah, I mean, 10 and 8, especially the 10-year-old, it's got to mess him up.
Oh, this would mess up any child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
On October 10th, a John Smith Facebook account makes inquiries about a blue 26-inch Schwinn mountain bike for sale on Facebook Marketplace.
Okay.
Interesting thing about this mountain bike is it doesn't have reflector plates on the wheels.
Okay.
The man who's selling it is Michael Blazing. 2 days later, on October 12th, Tim inquires via Facebook to Amy Webster about a black mongoose bike for sale. He ends up buying the blue 26-inch bike.
Okay.
Now, by January 5th of 2023, Becky runs into a friend of hers, Melissa Young at TJ Maxx. Melissa says that Becky looked mentally and physically exhausted.
I'm sure.
They chatted about Becky's divorce, and she said that she felt like Tim could snap at any moment. Becky tells Melissa that Tim said to her, quote, you'll be dead before you get any of my money, end quote.
Well, there's another foreshadowing. We got a lot of foreshadows in this.
There's lots of them.
Wow.
Also in January, Tim goes to a neighbor, Bradley Eamon, and asks him if he has any video cameras pointed toward his backyard. Paranoid much, Tim?
Yeah.
Then on February 10th, 2023, Tim calls the Quincy Police Department. He asks them if they will return the 9mm handgun to Becky because he didn't want to give it to her face to face. And they say, look it, pal, you need to put your big boy panties on and take the gun to your wife.
Right.
They didn't say that, but they were like, we're not doing it for you. You have to do this.
That was the translation.
That was the translation. Yes, yes. Now, by this time, Becky has started dating again. It's been 2 years since Tim filed for divorce.
Sure.
And on February 13th, Ted Johnson, the man Becky's been seeing, comes to her house on Kentucky Road around 11:45 p.m. Ted stays the night. At this point, the divorce trial is just a week away. Then on February 14th, Valentine's Day, at midnight, Tim's Whoop armband loses its Wi-Fi or cell connection, and his phone is locked. So if you don't know what a Whoop is, it's a wristband that you wear, kind of looks like a watch, but without a face.
Right.
Physical exertion, sleep load, sleep quality, general health, and your body's ability to bounce back from all of those things.
Gotcha.
So it measures the physical and mental demands on your body. Can you tell I went to their website? That's what a Whoop does.
If I had one, it would just register laughing.
And Tim, the old ex-athlete that he is, he wears one of these.
Sure.
And this device connects to Wi-Fi or cellular technology. Then from 12 midnight until 1 a.m., video surveillance sees a bicycle rider going past the Quincy bus barn, like where the school buses are, and then past a residence at 224 South 20th Street, and then back again.
Okay.
So these two surveillance cameras catch all of this.
Okay.
And on this same night, Becky's next-door neighbor, Tim Hyman, gets an alert on his phone that movement was detected in his driveway. We have this around our house, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see the squirrels and our newest neighbor or our newest vermin neighbor. We have a possum that won't go away.
Mr. Possum.
Yep.
He likes to sit on top of our fence.
He sits on top of the fence. Yeah.
And drives Scotty crazy.
Drives the dog crazy. Yeah. Yeah. But we can see that in the backyard.
Yeah.
And he and his wife look at this footage right then and there in real time, which you can do,
right,
and see a man in a hoodie walking up and down the driveway. And these two call Becky and say, we think there's somebody in your backyard because they're definitely in your driveway.
Right.
And she doesn't pick up. But the next day she tells them that night she thought she heard voices, and she tells her neighbors that she's afraid no matter what or where she is.
Wow.
At 1:10 a.m. on the 14th, when this stranger is in the driveway, between 1:10 and 1:30 a.m., Tim's laptop, which is password protected, his search history shows searches for, quote, license plate lookup, title and registration lookup, VIN check lookup, vehicle records. The plate number he's keying in over and over again is Ted Johnson's, Becky's boyfriend.
Of course.
Now, after his Whoop reconnects to Wi-Fi, at 1:32 a.m., a phone call is made from Tim's phone to the Missouri Department of Revenue, the people who handle vehicle registrations. And I don't know who he thought he was going to get on the phone at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
I always feel like I can barely get anybody on the phone at the DMV during working hours.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a government office.
Yeah.
So maybe he left a message. I don't know. But it did record that he picked up his phone and called this number. Now, by this time, it's February 15th. The divorce is set to go to trial on March 3rd, 2023.
Okay.
And from February 16th to February 20th, there's no bicyclist captured on the home security cameras and the camera at the Quincy bus lot.
Hmm.
Then on February 19th and 20th, Becky stays with a friend of hers who's about to have abdominal surgery. And the next day, on February 21st, at 12:45 a.m., Tim's Whoop band disconnects again. And it's around this time that the bus barn shows this bicycle rider going southbound on 20th Street and then going east on Prairie Street.
He's pretty predictable.
He is.
Yeah.
But then at 2:11 a.m., the Whoop band, it reconnects again. The next day, still February 21st, at 12:30 p.m., around lunchtime, Becky comes home. She messages Tim and asks if he will keep the kids overnight for the next 2 days. And he agrees. She says that she's not feeling well.
Hmm.
Now, that night, Becky's boyfriend, Ted Johnson, comes over to Becky's house. And that night, past midnight, and on February 22nd at 12:42 a.m., Tim's Whoop band disconnects and his phone locks. Now, when I read all this information, they talk about his phone locking. And I'm assuming that he's putting his phone in airplane mode.
Right.
At 2:19 a.m., his Whoop armband reconnects again. At 2:22, his phone unlocks. He takes it off of airplane mode.
Okay.
The next night, on February 23rd, at 12:28, just past midnight, Tim's phone goes into airplane mode. It locks. 12:36, his Whoop disconnects. At 12:55, video catches a person riding southbound past the bus barn on a blue bike with no reflectors. At 12:57, video shows the same cyclist turning east on Prairie Street. And here's what prosecutors say happened between 12:57 and 1:11 a.m. So, 14 minutes. And in those 14 minutes, Tim used a patio chair to climb to the top of the side of the house.
All right.
Now, this house doesn't have a gabled roof. It has like a flat roof.
Okay.
So he climbs from this chair to the first rooftop.
Right.
And then from that rooftop to the next rooftop, which I'm assuming is the second floor.
Sure.
He walks past three bedroom windows and he waits and he goes into the last window using a crowbar. And it's one of the boys' bedrooms.
Okay.
Once in the house, Tim confronts Becky, who runs to the bathroom to barricade herself in while trying to call 911. Her phone will show that at 1:11 a.m., Becky attempts to call 911.
Okay.
Her phone is taken from her or kicked from her hand. It lands behind the bedroom door.
Okay.
She shuts the door to the bathroom, but Tim kicks in the door. Tim uses a plastic reusable Aldi bag over the 9mm handgun to muffle the sound or catch shell casings or both.
Yeah.
He points the gun and fires 15 rounds
Good
at Becky.
Grief.
14 of them hit her.
It's rage.
He leaves her paralyzed from the waist down, dying in her dark bathroom. Becky isn't killed instantly. She has a bullet in her lung. She suffers for a few agonizing minutes before she succumbs to her injuries. At 1:12 a.m., an ADT alert said that the front door to Becky's house is open. And at 1:16 a.m., a video captures a bicyclist riding past the bus barn. At 1:27 a.m., ADT alerts that the front door is still open. And at 2:01, Tim's Whoop band reconnects. And 6 minutes later, at 2:07 a.m., his phone is taken out of airplane mode.
Wow.
Now, the next morning at 6:45, Brian Lash, who lives next door to Becky on Kentucky Road, sees Becky's door is open. He's leaving for work, and he sees this door is open. But he doesn't think that much about it because, you know, maybe she's getting the kids ready for school. The door is open. They're running in and out. But right. He does see that the door is open.
Okay.
Between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m., Amy Schmiedskamp sees Tim bring a little Tykes basketball hoop to his dad's house. Now, I'm assuming maybe he did this after he takes the boys to school.
Okay.
But he takes this basketball goal to his dad's house, a place where she doesn't want those kids to be.
Right.
I mean, they're only supposed to be around the grandfather under supervision.
Right.
Then at 11:51 a.m., Tim calls St. Peter's School, where the boys attend, and tells them do not allow the three boys to walk home to Becky's house after school. And after that, he calls his then-girlfriend, Kelly Lepley, who was also his neighbor, and tells her, I've got an empty house. Come on over. And she does, and they have sex. She leaves at 1:15 p.m. Then at 1:50, Tim goes to St. Peter's School. That's 57 minutes before school is going to let out.
Right.
And at 3:03, Tim texts Becky's father, Bill, asking if he can call Becky to find out when she's getting the kids, because he's claiming the school called him to say, nobody's come by to pick up your three boys. And the school did not, in fact, call to say that no one had picked up the boys.
Yeah, I mean, how stupid can he be? I mean, of course they
How arrogant.
Records. Yeah.
How arrogant. Ugh. Becky's dad drives to her home on Kentucky Road and finds Becky upstairs in the bathroom dead. He goes to the neighbor, Rolla Wilkes' home, and calls 911. 3 minutes later, Officer Matt Hermsmer gets dispatched to 2528 Kentucky Road. At close to 4 p.m., Rolla Wilk goes to pick up Becky's mother, Bernie.
Okay.
She calls Tim on the way, and I read this transcript. He answered the phone and said, "What?"
Hmm.
And maybe he said that in response to her saying, "Becky's dead." But the way I read it in the transcript was that he was annoyed when he answered the phone and said, "What?"
Wow.
By 7 p.m., they've picked up poor Ted Johnson, the man Becky was dating, who I'm sure was really distraught.
Yeah.
They find him, question him, and get a DNA swab. He, of course, is cleared.
Sure.
Police search the house looking for clues. They see the chair by the side of the house, and on the roof, the window pried open. Inside is one footprint, but there's not much physical evidence. There was no murder weapon, no bloody clothes, no DNA. If it hadn't been for Becky and Tim's ugly divorce, police might have believed it was just a robbery gone wrong.
Right.
But the problem with that is that nothing was even taken from the home. No valuables are missing.
Wow.
So police start asking the neighbors if they had cameras, a Ring doorbell, a security camera. And if they did, could they have the footage?
Right.
And this is where they see the man walking the driveway a week before the murder from Becky's next door neighbor. So then they see the bike footage taken from a house and a security camera at the Quincy bus lot. And even though you can't make out who is on the bike or who is walking up and down the driveway, it seems to be a man with a blue bike with no reflectors on the wheels.
Right.
Now, on February 27th, 4 days after Becky's murder, police find an abandoned blue Schwinn bike near the Quincy Public Schools bus barn, less than a half a mile from Tim's home.
Wow.
But there's no DNA on this bike.
It's wiped clean.
On March 1st, they get a warrant to search Tim's home on Hampshire Street. They go in the morning. He's very cooperative. And they look at all his gloves, etc. They look through his clothes. They find no blood.
Right.
They do take some shell casings from his basement where he's been shooting. Remember, he's a sport shooter.
Sure.
They also take photos in Tim's house, and what they see are stacks of Aldi bags.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and I just want to pause for a moment, because if you don't know Aldi, you have to bring your own bag or buy one when you're there. So you keep them, you recycle them, and bring them back with you.
Sure.
But under Becky's fingernails, they have DNA. The problem is, it could belong to Tim, but it could also belong to their sons.
Gotcha.
Police have pieced together all these fragments of this plastic and realize this is an Aldi bag. That's really the only evidence we have.
Right.
They take Tim's phone and electric devices and do a forensic extraction.
Okay.
And even though there's no physical evidence yet, they can see where Tim's turned his phone off and on.
Right.
And the same thing with this Whoop thing, the same deal.
Sure.
So they search his home on March 1st, and when they do that morning, they see that Tim is wearing this Whoop thing. Mm-hmm. So he can't say, "Oh, I don't even use that. I don't wear it, whatever." Right. They're like, we're taking that.
Right.
You wear that every day. So because the footage of the bikes match up with the times Tim has his electronic devices turned off, it's enough to arrest him. And they do just that on March 13th at 8 a.m.
Okay.
Tim is arrested on Kentucky Road and charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of home invasion. On March 14th, Tim makes his first court appearance, and he is denied bail.
Mm-hmm.
On March 24th, Tim pleads
not guilty.
Not guilty.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Tim is entitled to a speedy trial, and that is exactly what he chooses. And now the DA and prosecution will have 90, count them, 90 days to be ready for this trial.
Jeez.
And they were.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
When the trial started on May 23rd, 2023, Adams County Judge Robert Adrian was presiding. The two assistant DAs were Josh Hones and Laura Keck, and they were able to show how Tim had his own phone, but he also had a burner phone and a fake Facebook account where he called himself John Smith. And John Smith asked about buying the bikes, the blue bike without the reflectors on the wheels that is found abandoned not a half a block from his house.
Wow.
Now, even though they didn't have DNA, what they did have was his digital footprint.
Right.
And the bike footage. Not just from the night of the murder, but from the night that Becky's new boyfriend's car is searched on Tim's phone. Hmm. So they go through the surveillance video in the early morning hours of February 14th, February 21st, the 22nd and 23rd. And even though they can't make out a face, or even if it's a male or female, these biking excursions match up with the timeline so perfectly that Tim is turning off his phone and his fitness band. Hmm. The fitness band that the police see him wearing when they search his house on March 1st.
Sure.
But the kicker for me is that on top of Becky telling everyone that she was afraid of him, that she thought he was dangerous, that Tim's family, his father, someone would be exposed in some way during the divorce trial, even though they found searches on his phone for how to open a door with a crowbar, how to make a homemade silencer, how to clean gunpowder off your hands, and the fact that the prosecution shows how Tim is taking a bit of a victory lap the day after he murders her because he takes the basketball hoop over to his parents' house,
right,
a place where there's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight in the courtroom over Becky allowing her boys to be with Tim's dad.
Sure.
And before he goes to school and waits, and remember, he called and said, don't let them walk home from school.
Yeah.
And I think he did that because he knows the front door's open and he doesn't want his boys to see what he did to their mother.
Of course.
But also during all this time, he has a romp in the sack with his new girlfriend just hours after murdering his estranged wife.
Unbelievable.
There is so much circumstantial evidence. There's no DNA or eyewitnesses, just motive and speculation. That is, until that 9mm handgun shell casings left behind at the crime scene are looked at and compared to the 9mm shell casings in the basement of Tim's house.
Dun, dun, dun.
There were 9 shell casings left behind at the crime scene that night. There are many more shell casings left in the floor of Tim's basement.
Okay.
And 27 casings in the basement were a match.
Wow.
But the gun Becky wanted back that was in her name, yeah, the gun Tim wanted police to get to her instead of giving it to him himself.
Right.
That's nowhere to be found.
Okay.
And if you understand ballistics, each gun leaves a signature on the casing.
They all have their own fingerprint.
They all have their own unique fingerprint.
Yep.
And there were 9 left behind, which matched 27 from his house. Now, he had more than 27 there that they collected, mm-hmm, and those did not match, which means he had his own 9mm gun somewhere, or yeah, a gun that was shooting that same ammunition.
Right.
50 witnesses testified in the trial, and almost 200 pieces of evidence were presented by the prosecution.
Wow.
The defense called?
No one.
0 witnesses.
Yeah.
It took the jury 4 hours to come to their verdict. Guilty. The victim impact statements were brutal.
I'm sure.
Becky's mom, Bernadette Bernie, said, quote, you replaced their mother's love with emotional scars and trauma, end quote. Mm. Sarah's husband and Becky's brother-in-law asked him if he took into account the effects his actions would have on their 3 sons. And I'm not going to use their names because there's no reason to.
Sure.
Only their initials. But Tim's brother-in-law said, quote, did you think about 12-year-old D as you broke through his window? Did you think about 10-year-old G as you charged down his hallway, chasing his defenseless mommy en route to slaughter his entire world? End quote.
Jeez.
The DA wasn't pulling any punches either. When he spoke to the jury, he said, quote, I asked this court to show the same mercy he showed Becky when he left her alone on that cold bathroom floor, paralyzed from the waist down, unable to breathe because he had lodged a bullet in her lung.
Wow.
Before sentencing, Tim's attorney, Casey Schneck, asked the judge to set aside the verdict or order a new trial, arguing that Google searches made on Tim's phone and laptop that were introduced as evidence were never proven to be made by Tim.
Nice try.
To which the judge said, they're password protected.
Yeah.
She also argued hearsay statements that were introduced that were, quote, impossible to cross-examine, end quote, during the trial.
Yeah.
Judge Adrian denied all of Casey Schnack's motions.
Right.
Tim had the chance to speak to the court and Becky's family and friends before the sentencing. Do you think he said anything to him?
Of course not.
He declined.
Yeah.
The judge wasn't easy on Tim either. Adams County Circuit Judge Robert Adrian admonished Tim Bleefnik while passing the sentence. He said, quote, you researched this murder. You planned this murder. You practiced this murder. You broke into her house and shot her 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 times.
Wow.
I don't know how long it took you to do that. Some of those shots were fired while she was lying on the ground. And you did all of that while your children were upstairs at your house, lying snug in their beds, end quote.
Wow.
Brutal.
Yep.
Tim was sentenced to 3 life sentences in August of 2023 with natural life in prison. That means there'll be no opportunity for parole, credit for any time served, or possibility of ever being released.
Good.
According to his attorney, Casey Schnack, Tim will be appealing the guilty verdict. Now, Tim still says he's innocent, but according to Becky's sister, Sarah, Tim was the guy who never admitted that he was wrong about anything.
Right.
Quote, he was never able to admit fault or even compromise in life or marriage before this happening, end quote.
Wow.
The boys now live with their grandparents, Becky's mom and dad. There is a GoFundMe page set up to help with raising Becky's 3 precious boys, and I will put a link to it in the show notes.
Okay.
But that is the story of Becky Bleefnik. That's all I have to say about that. Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners, the wait is over. If you're a reader or a fan of my Sex and Lies series, Book 10, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll is now available on Amazon. With a successful tour and 2 years of sobriety under his belt, rock star Noah Hart is ready to put his secrets and the past behind him. That is, until his former bandmates and business partners are murdered one by one, and suddenly he becomes the prime suspect. When FBI agent Louisa Hathaway is assigned to the case, no one, including her partner, is aware she carries her own secrets, including an undeniable infatuation with rock and roll's bad boy, Noah Hart. As the body count rises, Agent Hathaway is torn between unraveling the truth and falling for the man who might be the killer. Don't miss this new book, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll, by me, Chris Calvert. Only on Amazon. Rock and roll will never die, but it might kill you.
You know, somebody so narcissistic and selfish,
yeah,
they don't even think about the kids. They don't think about the lives they ruin. I mean, it's all about themselves.
Yeah, he's only thinking of himself.
Yeah.
He really is only thinking of himself. And if you watch the 48 Hours episode where they speak with him while he's in jail, you know, he's pretty cocky, you know, in saying that, you know, he's innocent and he didn't do anything. And yeah. It's honestly, for me, it was a little hard to watch because I already knew that he was guilty when I started watching it.
Yeah.
And it was a little, it's hard to watch knowing how accomplished, how wonderful she was to not just her own family, but as a nurse and in the community. And then there's him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's put away for life.
Me too.
Good riddance.
Yeah, me too. But if you can go to that GoFundMe page and even give a buck for these 3 little boys, that would be great.
That'd be awesome. All right. Well, let's move from that and go to something really stupid with a little bless your heart.
Well, bless your heart.
All right. Number one, and I'm calling this, how many feet are in, let's see, stupid?
There's 12 inches in a foot of stupid.
That's it. All right. In a bizarre robbery attempt, 3 criminal masterminds in Peru.
Peru?
Yep. Broke into a shoe shop and stole more than 200 shoes.
Wow.
Yeah. And although police were alerted, the thieves managed to escape before they arrived.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, the authorities, well, they were puzzled by the strange theft, wondering why anyone, and here we go, would steal so many shoes, but only those meant for the right foot.
Oh, my gosh. They took all the righties and left the lefties behind?
Yes, they did. The burglary occurred at night, and the shop owner, well, he estimates the loss at nearly $13,000. However, the perpetrators could not sell the shoes because they were incomplete pairs.
Only if you have 2 feet that are the same, like Jerry Fleck.
Yeah, from Best in Show. Perfect.
I just used to go in circles. Yeah. I just went in circles.
Well, the police are now hunting for the suspects using CCTV footage and fingerprint data to identify and arrest them.
Okay.
It remains unclear what motivated the thieves to steal only the right-footed shoes, but some speculate that the criminals did not plan their heist thoroughly and made a significant blunder. Duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it gets better. Just when you think it couldn't get any dumber. CCTV footage shows the thieves breaking the padlock and collecting the shoes.
Yeah.
On a tricycle.
You're kidding me.
That's what it says.
That's not real.
That's what it says. The thieves stole shoes from various small and large brands. Now, here's the best part. Twitter had a field day with this, and the two best ones that I read were, "They must be hopping mad." And then one guy photoshopped a pair of his bare right feet only and captioned it to say, "Tell them I need a few pairs."
They must be hopping mad.
Isn't that great?
That's great. That was a good one.
Yeah. Okay, number two. I'm just a working stiff.
Oh, I don't even want to know where this is going.
Oh, it's not that bad. A man who stood motionless in a shop window in Warsaw holding a bag and hoping to pass for a mannequin.
Oh, he's in like the storefront?
Yeah, has been charged with suspected theft and burglary. Polish police said the 22-year-old suspect went unnoticed by staffers and shoppers as he stood frozen in the window to blend in with the mannequin.
This is like a, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop or something. He steals something, then he gets in the window. And
He was accused of going into various departments and taking jewelry after closing time. Yeah. With a bag in his hand, he stood still in front of a shop window, pretending to be a mannequin.
How long? Do you know how long he stood there?
They didn't say. It had to have been forever, though. Yeah. Warsaw police said in a statement, when he felt safe, he went hunting and robbed the island of jewelry.
Ugh.
Yeah. The man was also accused of other shopping center incidents. Yeah. On another day, he allegedly went into a shopping center. He went into the bar after closing time and ate his fill, then entered a designer clothes shop to exchange his clothes for new ones. He was captured on CCTV, sliding under a tiny gap in the shop shutters.
Wow.
Yeah, in another incident.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He's Houdini.
Yeah. He's alleged to have waited until closing time to take money from several cash registers and to have attempted to steal items. Eventually, police said his luck finally ran out.
I bet.
Yeah, when he was spotted and held by security. The man has been remanded into custody for 3 months and could face up to 10 years in prison if convicted.
So, funny story, when I was very young, like high school, I was part of this group of people who modeled in a department store, a well-known department store, in the junior section, and they would dress us up, and we were like human mannequins. But people would pass by and really think you were a mannequin, and it's very hard to stand there because it gets uncomfortable after a while, and you get to move. But when you did move, you'd just scare the absolute crap out of whoever was standing around you. So it was pretty funny, but I have done that before.
Oh, wow. All right. Moving on. Number three.
All right.
He thought he was at IKEA.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. This happened in Flagler, Florida. And I hope I'm saying that right.
Flagler, Florida.
Yeah. Say that 10 times fast. I have problems saying my last name, let alone Flagler, Florida. A man in Florida was dubbed by sheriff's office as the dumb criminal of the week after he was caught trying to assemble a stolen electric razor scooter in front of the Target that he was accused from stealing it from.
What?
I know.
He walked out the door and then just stopped and started.
Sat down and started putting it together. Yeah.
Come on, dude.
Yeah. According to the county sheriff's office, the man was witnessed walking past cashiers out Target's front door without paying for the scooter worth $539.99.
Wow.
Yep. Officials say that instead of fleeing the scene of the crime, the man stopped on the sidewalk in front of the Target and started assembling the scooter.
We had to assemble his getaway.
Yeah. Hang on a second. A responding deputy caught the man before he could finish assembling it and gave him a ride to jail.
Aww.
Yeah, but if I were the cop, I would have made him finish assembling it and made him ride it to the pokey.
Yeah. Hang on to the bumper. Here we go.
Yep. So there you go. There's your dumb criminals.
Oh, bless their hearts.
Yep.
Well, if you have a bless your heart or you know somebody's heart who needs blessing, all you got to do is go to hitchtohomicide.com where there's a pull-down menu.
Yes.
And you can also suggest a case. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to put in another little window on the website where people can tell their own true crime stories that we can feature.
Absolutely. I think it's a great idea.
So coming soon.
Yeah. Along with 50 other things we're doing.
Along with all the other things on the website. It'll be there,
yep.
I promise.
Yep.
That's all we have today. That's my amazing husband out there.
That's my beautiful bride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.